This is it. Your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Are you tired of your scented cleaning products smelling and cleaning like meh? Then it's time for an upgrade with the power of Clorox Scentiva. With an uplifting scent that smells like coconut, Clorox Scentiva gives you powerful clean like Clorox, but a feeling like being transported to a tropical island retreat. Imagine putting your phone on Do Not Disturb, tuning out all the constant, just the feeling of warm sand in between your toes and a fruity drink in your hand. The ones with the little umbrella. Refresh your home to feel like an all-inclusive vacation by getting Clorox Scentiva. Also available in grapefruit and lavender scents at a nearby retail store.
At JCPenney, fashion counts for everybody and everybody. It's spring, and with the weather changing and so many great things coming up like Mother's Day and the wind down tour, I definitely need a fresh spring wardrobe for every occasion. This spring, I'm looking for that perfect flowy spring dress for Mother's Day, as well as replacing my everyday basics. That's what I love about JCPenney. They have so many stylish and comfortable options that I always find just what I'm looking for there. Spring is a feel-good season and comes in all shapes, sizes, and colors. The fashion at JCPenney is the same way. Refresh your wardrobe this spring with styles that gets you, something to wear that fits your favorite moments of the season at prices that feel just as good. Discover brands that get you and put style and comfort first, like Worthington and Liz Claiborne for her, each in women's petite and plus sizes, and Stafford and Mutual Weave for him, style and comfort for all, even big and tall. Plus even more for the whole family like Levi's and Exertion. Here, spring comes in all shapes, sizes, and colors. JCPenney, make everybody count.
Hello, this is Let's Talk About Myths, Baby, and I am your host, Liv. Before we even get into the intro for this episode, though, I have something very fun to share with you. It is a trailer for a new podcast called The Flame. It is an LGBTQ musical, and it is incredibly fun, so I'm going to show you the trailer for that before we dive into this episode. Enjoy.
Hi, I'm Jamie, and I'm the owner of your new favorite LGBTQ bar, The Flame. Here at The Flame, everyone's family. And just like a family, when things get tough, we band together.
We'll keep it lit, lit, lit. Don't ever quit, quit, quit. We'll never let The Flame go out.
Join us every Wednesday at The Flame to hear how I save my bar and maybe, just maybe, fall in love. The Flame, an original LGBTQ podcast musical starring Jen Colella and Jasmine Savoy Brown, now on the Broadway Podcast Network. Visit bpn.fm/theflame for more info and to listen and follow the podcast.
Now, fun fact, I record the introduction to these conversation episodes without any kind of script, and therefore they go a little bit more off of the rails than most. Really quite exciting, really keeping me on my toes, I would say, and none more than this episode with wonderful Lisa Charlotte of Sweet Bitter. Lisa and I have become friends through our two podcasts and we get along super well. So this episode was both very fun and absolutely ridiculous to edit. because we also had drinks with us. Oh my gosh. Which means, yes, it was a little freewheeling at times, a little less structured than you might be getting used to with some of my conversation episodes. And that's the way I work. It was really so exciting. We talked about Sappho and what Sweet Bitter has learned in researching her for their podcast, which again, I recommend. But we also talked specifically about this controversy that took place while they were researching their Sappho episode. And oh man, the drama involved. You will not believe it. You will truly never see it coming. It was such a fun conversation. We just had, you know, a great time. I did not have a great time editing it, but none of you have to know that except for when I tell you about it. So please sit back and enjoy this incredibly fun conversation once more about our girl, Sappho. Conversations, the sexuality of Sappho with bonus controversy, with Lisa Charlotte of Sweet Bitter. Thank you so much for coming on, Lisa. We're just friends as it is, so this is going to be a bit of like a fast and loose conversation.
Absolutely. And, just any excuse to drink with you on a Sunday afternoon and talk about erasure in history.
It's a story of sort of my attempts at this podcast all the time. But this came about because you, along with Ellie and Elise, last year, I guess, started Sweet Bitter, and I'm sure you just learned so much about generally like queer identities and everything to do with that in the ancient world. So I wanted to make sure I had you on. We missed having you on the Sweet Bitter episode of my podcast. So now you get one all to
Three
yourself.
Three guests is too many guests. Absolutely.
It was also so early in my like editing voices together days. And I was just like, the idea of editing together four voices makes me want to curl up in a ball and cry.
Absolutely. It's really tough. And actually, we have had people who have said, we'll have all three of you. And we're just like, no, it's too many people. It's just too many people on a call. But I mean, special bonus thing that I didn't expect, which is that now I get my whole own episode. Suck it, Ellie and Elite. Don't make me love them so much. But yes, we did start this podcast about Sappho. As I'm sure they told you, it really originated because I heard about it on another podcast and I was like, who is a Sappho? And like, you know, it took me a long time to come into my identity. I'm bisexual, and I think like a lot of bisexual women especially, I had like slept with women, but I was like, I'm straight. All straight people do this. And so it's really hard to accept your identity, I think, in queer spaces, having that very different experience, like, I guess, externally always looking quite heterosexual and whatnot. And it's been really me and just really great trying to create an inclusive podcast that does include bisexual people, because Sappho's name is often used to exclude them from, you know, lesbian identity and sapphic identity. So it's been a journey, but I'm not a historian.
Neither am I. But that have a BA from 10 years ago, so don't worry. But that's really interesting. I hadn't thought about that, but you're right. Like, Sappho is so often ascribed either, like, it's like either she's straight or she's, you know, lesbian exclusively. It doesn't, I mean, there's not a lot of talk about her in general, I think, in sort of like more like less academic, less like nerd filled spaces, and there should be, but in general, yeah, you think about like the word sapphic or lesbian for lesbos, all of that tends to exclude bisexual people. But she did write about men and women, right?
Yeah, she did, and there's debate about that, like whether or not she was speaking as a character. I mean, as you know, her husband is Kirkulos of Andros, which is Dick from Man Island. But which is still my favorite joke about all of it. But the funniest thing for me has been, like, you know, I've been spending a lot of time on Twitter.com, and my favorite thing is when people, like, very firmly assert her identity. So they're like, Sappho was a bi lesbian. Sappho was a lesbian. Sappho was bisexual. And there was, I think, someone from Ireland the other day, and I don't know who it was, and it was the most perfect response. And they were like, she told you that, I? Like, it's just like, exactly. Like, they didn't even use these words. Like, lesbian is from Sappho.
Yeah, like, yeah, as if it existed. She's literally a woman from Lesbos. That's where we get the word. She is a lesbian, but then every single person from Lesbos is and was a lesbian.
Yes, and not in the way that we talk about it today.
Exactly.
Which apparently the Isle of Lesbos tried to sue over this, over the use of the word lesbian.
Who would...
I don't know.
Who would they sue?
The world? Like, we're so mad.
The whole world? I'm going to sue the English language.
So, I mean, it's just been a really interesting, an interesting thing for me. And I just, I mean, I've always found this, and I think maybe, like, as a virtue of aging, you get a little less certain. And I found this so interesting in sort of, like, the pandemic with TikTok, and you see these 18-year-olds who are like, this is facts and this is how it is. And I'm just like, you don't know. Like, we don't know. We just did a whole podcast on Sappho. And all I will say, like, with, I guess, a level of confidence, is that she was a woman who loved other women. And that's all I'm going to say.
And she wrote poetry.
And she wrote poetry. We can agree on that.
She wrote poetry.
But yes, yep. We've had people email us and message us and being like, I'm bisexual, but I really love your podcast. But one of the hosts is bisexual. This is also your history. So it's been, yeah, it's been a great thing to be a part of. I still feel like not queer enough.
Interesting. I mean, like, obviously this is different, but I feel this so deeply in just, like, the way I position myself and this podcast in the world of classics. Like, I always feel like I am not academic or enough or not, like, classic centric enough. And, like, it has nothing to do with my, you know, personal identity, so I don't want to connect it in that way. But I do, I definitely, like, identify with the idea of just, like, not being enough in something that you are enough in.
Yes.
Like, you objectively are enough. You are bisexual enough, and I am classics enough.
How much pussy do I have exactly. to eat is my always my question. Like, what's the number? Just tell me the number. But no, it's true. And but I think that actually that's what's really great. So I mean, I used to run a lot of events around different topics, and honestly, academics, they get so caught up in the weeds of things that their content often isn't that accessible. They're so, like, it's a different way of thinking. And, like, obviously we work with Elise, who's an incredible academic, and it's such an asset. And she's also great at, like, podcasting, but is definitely very different. And I think that for us being, like, self-professed, like, not experts has actually produced a really good podcast about Sappho, because we're sort of on the journey. And, like, we probably haven't got everything 100% right, but we were just on a journey with our listeners. So I'm hoping more Sappho content comes, I mean, not as a result of us, but, like, just as time goes on, because she's such an interesting figure. And honestly, I feel like we've barely scratched the surface in, like, 12 episodes.
Yeah, I think that's, I mean, that's very accurate. Definitely, like, describing academics as an asset, I think, is important. Like, I've now, you know, kind of turned this podcast into having academics on all the time, and I love it. It's fascinating because you do get this, like, very different side of all of it, just because these are people who, like, study it in a way that I don't and never will. I'm constantly weighing out my own feelings on, like, feeling like I'm doing enough without being an academic, where I'm like, I really, it's fine. Like, I have a commercial podcast. It's fine. But then at the same time, like, learning so much from when I do have them on. And I think there's a good balance to be set of coming at something in a really accessible way while still having the asset of, like, some academia on your side. And I think...
Yeah. And I mean, both of us have, like, a bachelor's degree, and I think that that's, you know, that's a great asset. But I just think, like, what's the point of knowledge if it's not accessible? Like, what's the point of, like, having it all up in a... Yeah. Which also, Sappho's great for that. She is... I just think, like, we talked about this on a live episode, is, you know, she... her Twitter account, for example, like the Sappho bot accounts, it's like, you can just read this on the internet today. It's so accessible and relevant, like, 2500 years later. It's amazing.
I think, like, so I really did not know enough about Sappho in general. I mean, for one, I think she was, like, barely mentioned, if ever mentioned, in my BA, which I think is deeply wrong.
Gasp.
Right?
Oh, well, like, gasp.
It's, come on. And I feel, I can't even tell you exactly, like, you know, when I learned her name, or I just feel like, to me, and I am the type of person who takes in information that I don't recognize I'm necessarily taking in, but I just knew, you know, that she was a woman poet generally who wrote about women. But I don't think I really understood the importance of her or how famous she was. That's what really gets me. How famous she was, I think, is utterly fascinating. So I do want to talk about that. I also want to talk about her husband, because I want to get more inside details than, like, you. So
I don't think we have any.
So, okay, no. So, and I'm sure I will have mentioned this on the episode that I have not written yet, but that will come out before our conversation. But Lisa was so wonderful as to share some of their research from those early days of Sweet Bitter, or even
Elise's
before
research,
it. Elise's research. Yes. Elise's research. Thank you, Elise.
Thank you, Elise.
And so, this idea that her husband, what was his name again?
Kirkolos of Andros. I'm probably not saying it right.
I can picture the spelling. Yeah. Yes. So it means, I know Andros means man.
Yes.
And that is an island, but.
Okay. So it was like Dick for Man Island, or like Dick Johnson for Man Island is how a lot of people say it. Which it's because it's referenced. It's not, she doesn't say it. It's referenced. A lot of people did parodies of Sappho in later times. And it was along with her being amazing at blowjobs, apparently. Which is, wow, men slut-shaming a lesbian? Ugh, gasp, audible gasp. So it was more in the parodies of her in later years to come when people were sort of telling her story. So, yes,
that's just
Kirkolos, our friend.
Yeah, it's interesting to think about. Just the, like, if she didn't mention him, you know, you gotta wonder, but...
Well, I mean, it's interesting because her poetry until very recently was translated heterosexually, because it's
right.
The default, apparently. And she does write a lot of wedding poetry. So that, you know, sometimes she is writing like for the bride and the groom. And so that's why it's hard to say, like, yes, she did write about men, but was she writing about men herself, or was she writing about men for weddings? And because we only have fragments of her poetry, mm-hmm. you know, it's hard to know. But we were speaking to Diane Rea, who is a translator of Sappho's work. And honestly, probably my favorite translations are often Rea's translations. And she was the first person to identify a gerund, I think, in Ode to Aphrodite, which is the only full poem of Sappho's that we have. And it was like one gerund of one sentence that was feminine. And she is the first person to translate Sappho's poems written about women, I think. So that's really interesting to me as well. It's just like, just the presumed heterosexuality, even though, like, historically we kind of knew that Sappho was gay. I mean, it was wide knowledge, but her poems had been mostly translated in a very heterosexual way. And Diane was like, well, this is Sappho. Why am I assuming that it's a man? But unlike the English language where we do she, he, like, quite often, I think Greek is not like that. I mean, you're the one studying Greek, but...
Well, Greek is... Greek. I mean, as far as I understand it, it's even more gendered. Because they're gendered, like, Latin is gendered where, like, way... And in the way that most romantic languages are gendered.
Oh, but not in the individual, but in the, like, an item is gendered.
An item is gendered, yeah, but the names are as well.
Mm.
So it's just interesting. Yeah, I'm curious. I definitely don't know enough ancient Greek yet to say anything with any, like, I literally can, like, pronounce it.
And it's Aeolic Greek, yeah. I don't know much about it, and I honestly, we've spoken about this before, I have really bad rote memory. I'm a very, like, conceptual thinker. So listen to our translation episode. I don't even know which one it is.
Yeah.
But I think it's like episode 7 or 8. Our episode on translation goes into all of that. It's incredible to me. And mm-hmm. it was definitely perceived. And, you know, it's Pride Month, so erasure of, you know, any homosexual relationships. And the idea of her as, like, either this, like, schoolmistress or a whore, which has been, like, her two kind of, like, identities. They're like, oh, no, she hung out with women because she was teaching them. Or, like, no, she was a whore. She was, like, giving men blowjobs all the time and threw herself off a cliff for some ferryman. Like, there, you know, it's just, it's what is wild to me about it is that it's so relatable in that it is so much the conversations and the things that men like say to me if I reject them now. Like, men have just like unchanged. They're like, wow, a powerful woman. What can I do? I'm going to call you a slut, or I'm going to, like, you know, virginize. Like, it's just the same shit. And I'm just amazed. That's been the biggest thing for me.
Yeah, just that nothing ends. Mm-hmm. It never ends. And I mean, that's basically like the crux of this podcast, mm-hmm. too. My podcast is like just, it's all the fucking same. And what one thing that strikes me as so shocking in everything that you've just said, but also like just everything we know about Sappho is like, so for me, I didn't know much about her. I didn't know the details. But obviously what I knew was she was a lesbian. Like, I know the word sapphic. I know the word lesbian. And so the idea that then her poetry was translated as heterosexual is so wild. And also at the same time, like, not at all surprising. You know, it's like this weird combination of like, but of course she was gay. So like, why are we not talking about, why are we translating it as if she wasn't? But simultaneously, like, of course that, you know, of course. Like, even one thing that's really interesting as I try to continue with Pride-based episodes on this podcast is that, because I'm running low, basically. I've told them all because there's not a lot of really extensive ones. But one thing I've noticed is that, like, there's basically no stories of women loving other women. And of course, like, it's all based in the same level of like what was and was not okay, but also primarily whose stories got told. And like, if there was a story about a woman loving another woman in Greek mythology, nobody wrote it down, which does not surprise me at all. And so, like, I'm sure they existed. I'm sure, because we have Sappho. So, like, obviously these stories existed, but we don't have them. Like, the best thing we have is Artemis and Callisto, except that Callisto's downfall is that Zeus transforms himself into Artemis to assault her. Just like revolting, mm-hmm. and horrifying, and like the only real, like, half decent myth we have of two women together. Whereas, like, there are so many myths of two men together, and then there are so many trans myths in fascinating ways. But when it comes to like two women together, it's like non-existent, because it just, like, the idea, you know, couldn't manifest itself because of the overarching nature of like dudes telling these stories and like just dudes being shitty.
Yeah, and I mean, it's interesting in terms of like thinking about Pride this year, and Pride is just like so much gayer this year. I feel like my friend group all collectively are getting gayer. Like, you know, I just keep getting messages being like, oh, it's my first Pride out. I'm like, of course it is. Everyone's just sat in lockdown and like, oh my god, I think I'm gay or like bi or whatever, and I just love this for everybody. There's been a lot of discourse around the kind of what I like to call the GLBTQ gays, which is the gays who like think that G should go first. There is so much patriarchy and misogyny in the gay community and racism and all of that. Like, it's and the intersectional lens that we're kind of shining on things, I think, is really useful. And it really plays into like what you're talking about, which is that no one wrote them down. And like, you're thinking about, you know, and I think what I've really loved is in conversations about Pride in the last few years, you get the story of Marsha P. Johnson being the first person to throw a stone. Like, it was, this is a movement, this is a parade that we have because of trans women of color, Black trans women of color, which is something that's just being completely left out of the discourse, in the same way that lesbians have often been left out of the discourse, bisexual people left out of the discourse. And actually, a lot of the early organizations for lesbians and for lesbian rights were named for Sappho. Like, Sappho as a name was like a code word for women to understand that they were like, that they loved each other. It was a very like covert way of letting people know. Like, I think, and I really should have done more research, but
you're on my podcast.
I mean, I was just, you know, I was like, I got wine, Is that not all I had to do?
That's step literally one, all you had to do. Don't worry.
Line. Step two, get on the phone to Liv. But it's there was definitely a lesbian social club that was founded in England, named for Sappho, or it's called Sappho, in Notting Hill. But there was also a magazine that was attached to that. And there have also been women's organizations and protests in her name. Her poetry and stuff is featured in magazines about revolution. Like, she is a really key figure for lesbians, actually, which in a way I kind of understand why some lesbians feel a need to exclude bisexual women from her story. I think we should move past that now. But I think a lot of it is people just don't understand the history of being queer and of the movement. There are so many great queer history podcasts that you can listen to kind of get that. But I'm rambling. But my point being is that Sappho is a name that was used by lesbian organizations throughout history to sort of as a point of revolution. I'm going to stop because I'm going to have some more wine.
No, but that's, yeah, that I almost feel like, just even you talking about that, I almost feel like the word sapphic feels older to me than lesbian, and I wonder if that's kind of that it was almost more of a code word earlier. I don't know, but it, to me,
I don't either, actually. I think a lot of it's really hard to track.
Yeah, well, it would be.
Okay, so I try to just like quickly while you were talking do a little search and find exactly the dates, because as I said, I'm really bad at dates. But whenever we said on the podcast that the lesbian was first used, it actually was used, I think, in everyday language before then, but it was the first time that it was like used widely. And our friend Heather at Lesbian History Motif podcast actually pointed it out to us, and we were like, do we go back and change it, which, as you know, is kind of difficult to do. And then eventually we were like, look, widely used. So I now would say like it started being widely used. I think it's in the late 19th century that it started being widely used, or mid to late. But I think it was used before then. In terms of sapphic, I know that Sappho was used quite frequently, but I couldn't say when sapphic came into popular discourse. And again, never claiming to be. I like to call myself a Sappho expert now, but I'm not claiming to know everything.
I mean, how could you? I get it.
But also, like, on that, what's been really interesting is I went to a lot of Sappho events in this time, and a lot of Sappho experts have no idea about the recent provenance and Obink scandal.
Mm-hmm.
And so, again, back to this conversation that we've had either on air or not, can't remember, about...
Lisa and I talk a lot.
Yes, we talk a lot. But about academics and about how academics and them being very, like, siloed is kind of like, you know, sometimes we're just very happy to have these podcasts where we're just kind of coming in a little bit, like, ignorant. I was at a Sappho event with a bunch of, like, world experts, and they had no idea about the most recent discovery of Sappho's work, which has been one of my favorite things that I've learned from the podcast.
I desperately want to hear about this.
This is it. Your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Are you tired of your scented cleaning products smelling and cleaning like meh? Then it's time for an upgrade with the power of Clorox Scentiva. With an uplifting scent that smells like coconut, Clorox Scentiva gives you powerful clean like Clorox, but a feeling like being transported to a tropical island retreat. Imagine putting your phone on Do Not Disturb.
tuning out all the constant, just the feeling of warm sand in between your toes and a fruity drink in your hand. The ones with the little umbrella. Refresh your home to feel like an all-inclusive vacation by getting Clorox Scentiva. Also available in grapefruit and lavender scents at a nearby retail store.
At JCPenney, fashion counts for everybody and everybody. It's spring, and with the weather changing and so many great things coming up like Mother's Day and the Wind Down Tour, I definitely need a fresh spring wardrobe for every occasion. This spring, I'm looking for that perfect flowy spring dress for Mother's Day, as well as replacing my everyday basics. That's what I love about JCPenney. They have so many stylish and comfortable options that I always find just what I'm looking for there. Spring is a feel-good season and comes in all shapes, sizes, and colors. The fashion at JCPenney is the same way. Refresh your wardrobe this spring with styles that gets you, something to wear that fits your favorite moments of the season at prices that feel just as good. Discover brands that get you and put style and comfort first, like Worthington and Liz Claiborne for her, each in women's petite and plus sizes, and Stafford and Mutual Weave for him, style and comfort for all, even big and tall. Plus even more for the whole family like Levi's and Exertion. Here, spring comes in all shapes, sizes, and colors. JCPenney, make everybody count.
I'm going to call it the Dirk Ebbing scandal, and I'm going to say very clearly that this is all alleged.
It is also, like, pretty widely alleged.
It's pretty widely alleged, but everything I'm telling you is something that I've learned from reading a source or from our podcast where we spoke to the people who are investigating this case. I'm going to give you, like, the quick TLDR. We did, like, 3 episodes on it, so I could not possibly tell you everything. Also, I'm pretty much going on memory because, like you, I'm very unprepared. So,
love it.
But this was one of my favorite things about the podcast, and we had no idea we were going to go in this direction. And it is something that I feel like, you know, after speaking to so many SAFO experts, this is like an area of knowledge that a lot of SAFO experts don't have. And I think it's so important, which is like, where do these fragments come from? Like, where do they come from? Because, you know, in all these conversations we're having around colonialism and Eurocentrism, it's so big in the ancient world. We are now, like, I think, like, the favorite podcast of papyrologists. Because we were like, oh my God, papyrologists is so interesting. And we have, like, 4 episodes, and all of papyrology Twitter was like, have you heard Sweet Bitter? We're all on there.
That's so, I love that. And also, like, it's the... That's the best level of nerd.
It is.
You know?
I love
the
it.
The best level of, like, just dorky incredibleness is, like, let's talk papyrus.
Yes! I love it so much. And so we had our first episode with Malcolm Choate, who is an Australian. And actually, it was kind of wonderful in a way. I was stuck in Australia because of COVID. And the Google search is interesting. It doesn't come up with everything. It's very, like, localized. I don't think we really realized that. And so I'm so grateful that I was in Australia because I found some really amazing Australians that I don't think I would have found. Like, we had 3 Australians on the podcast, and I don't think I would have found them if I'd been here. But because I was in Australia, yeah.
That's fascinating. Like, I know they're localized, but you'd think that you would still be able to find, like, experts and people like that. But that makes sense.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Yeah. But also, I mean, there is a frankness to Australians that I really appreciate. And I think we were talking about this. I'm sure it's similar to Canadians, where America's a very litigious society. And actually, we spoke to Italians and French people and stuff who were also quite, like, open about this specific thing. But because we are in a litigious society and because Ebbing is American, I think there was a lot of, like, allegedly. Whereas Malcolm was just like, here's how it is. Let me just tell you in English, plain English, Australian English. And he was amazing. So we did our first episode. We only had spoken to him, and he was like our papyrology guy. And then from this, it just, like, cascaded into, like, speaking to all of the biggest experts in the world about this scandal, including, you know, an Atlantic journalist, Roberta Mazza, who is, like, writing a book on this, who has, you know, been the person at the forefront of the investigation. Actually, we talked to her, and she'd been like, yeah, yeah, and then never followed up, and then we released our first episode on it, and she was like, I need to speak to you this week, and we were like, oh, I see. Now you're coming to us. I see. But she was also just like one of our favorite people. So basically what happened is this. So Dirk Obink is, well, he was the guy who controlled basically like the Oxford University collection of papyrology. And I mean, that in itself, it's all stuff that's been taken from mostly Egypt, that like really the Oxford has no business owning. And we spoke to an Egyptian papyrologist, Usama Gad, who talked to us a lot. And we did a whole episode on Eurocentrism and colonialism.
I mean, yeah. Do we need to go into what the UK should not be owning?
Exactly.
Like, this conversation is basically making me think about, like, who I could have on the podcast to talk about the British Museum.
Yeah, Usama Gad. Ask him. He's amazing. Yeah. Or Catherine Blouin, who is in Montreal, I think. She's Canadian. She's amazing. But they run Everyday Orientalism, which is an incredible kind of, like, papyrology ancient artifact blog, which talks a lot about these issues. But they have all these things because, you know, obviously Egyptians can't be trusted with them.
Just like the Greeks can't be trusted with the Parthenon marbles.
Of course not.
It just can't. No. These societies are just not evolved enough, even though we're going to talk about how the Greeks are the most evolved society in the world, but they also can't handle their own marbles, let alone the Egyptians that did it all long before the Greeks.
Absolutely.
Because the Egyptians were way fancier.
Which is anyway. Why the word civilization is a trigger for me.
As it
if
should
be. If anybody says civilized, I'm like, I'm sorry, what? Okay. But basically, Dirk Obink, MacArthur genius, grant winner, he's American, but he was tasked with running the Oxford Oxyrhynchus collection, biggest, I think it's the biggest collection of papyrus. And I don't know, there's so much to go into and I can't do it correctly, but basically there was like a new Sappho discovery. I think it was 2014, 2015, around that time. And it was sort of staged at another university, which names escapes me right now. It's a B name. Again, bad with facts, didn't take notes. But basically, they like staged. So it was this Sappho. It was a brother's poem. So it spoke about her three brothers. The provenance was very murky. So he's like, oh, I've discovered this new Sappho poem. He made a lot of like super sexist, creepy statements about being alone on an island with Sappho, which like... gross.
Ew.
But he basically was like, I found this new Sappho, and then the provenance was very murky. And so a bunch of papyrologists got really bored in lockdown and started exploring this stuff, which I think is amazing. So he'd like,
that is so good.
I love it. It's like one of my favorite
like,
stories out
so
of the
good.
Pandemic. So
I mean, I hear a lot about provenance lately, like just from being in this world on Twitter, and I find it super fascinating. And then I like worry about coins that I own, which is like literally all that I have. But provenance is, it's so interesting, and like the level of murkiness and the level of like sketch that can be involved in like where a thing came from is fascinating.
It's really fascinating and it's so important, and I think this scandal has, and probably why you're hearing about it so much recently, is because this scandal has really brought it into the forefront. So this is something that's been going on, and like all the people we spoke to made that really clear. They're like, this has been an issue in this world for a very long time, but this has like shone a light on it in a way that we just didn't really have before.
Well, and Hobby Lobby, do they get into this?
Yes.
Because my thought on like questionability and provenance, even before I got so deep into classics Twitter, was Hobby Lobby, because it became a big thing.
So basically I'm going to do like the TLDR of the whole situation, because as I said, three episodes, I really can't tell you everything.
The description of this episode will have links to the Sweet Bitter episodes that we talk about here, so you guys can please go listen and subscribe and all of those
things. So it's 5, 6, 7, it's three in a row. The first two are about the scandal, the third one is about Eurocentrism and colonialism in the papyrology world, which we just felt we needed a whole episode on because it's so important. But basically, Hobby Lobby had been working with Dirk Obink to try to find, because they were looking for older Bible, because they have the whole Museum of the Bible thing. But this is all stuff that's been reported. I'm sorry to say it like I'm saying it.
Allegedly.
It's all alleged.
Allegedly.
So basically, Hobby Lobby had been working with Dirk Obink to try to find older remnants of the Bible. And I think Ariel Sabah, who we were lucky enough to speak to, has a whole book called The Gospel of Jesus's Wife. And that goes into a lot of this. And so primarily they were trying to find older Bible artifacts. But along the way, Sappho stuff came up too, which, like, for me, I'm just like, oh my God, you're going to give a Christian organization Sappho artifacts? That feels not great. But whatever. So Hobby Lobby had commissioned Dirk Obbing. At some point, Oxford kind of found out and they were like, hey, you can't have both of these jobs. Like, you need to stop working with Hobby Lobby or you need to give up your spot at the Oxy Rinkus collection. Dirk Obbing was like, I'll stop working with Hobby Lobby. He did not, allegedly. So he said he wasn't going to work for them anymore, but then it turns out that he was. In some of my conversations with papyrologists, what's really interesting is that there were times, because apparently he was really lovely to other papyrologists, and when they would visit Oxford and he'd show them the collection. And anecdotally, one of the papyrologists that we spoke to was like, oh yeah, we were looking for a certain fragment and it wasn't there. And he was like, oh, that's weird. And then it turns out that there were fragments missing from the collection kind of registry, but someone had actually done an analog record, which I don't think he knew about. Now, I'm not saying that he stole from the Oxy Rinkus collection, because I don't know, and everything's alleged, but all I'm saying is that things were missing and that he was at some point arrested, and it's all just way more wild than I ever expected for our Sappho podcast that this story happened. I love that you're speechless. Like, I'm just, like, waiting for you to jump in and you're just shaking your head and just like, what?
That is, yeah, that is fucking mind-boggling. Mm-hmm. And it's just, I mean, like, aside from the levels of darkness, the levels of Eurocentrism and colonialism and just, like, you know, everything involved in that, but also, like, on the basic level of, like, what is Papyrus doing being so full of, like, intrigue and scandal?
I know!
Like, that's just hilarious to me. Like, on top of, there's so much. There's so many layers.
There's so much.
But also, like, let us laugh a little bit about Papyrus.
I know!
And, like, the provenance of Sappho fragments.
We had no idea that we were getting into this. And so many people who've listened are like, what the fuck? Episodes 4 to 8? Like, what? And we're like, we know. And that's, again, when I talk about, like, it's kind of great that we're not experts. Because I think that experts on Sappho wouldn't have gone on this tangent, whereas we're just like, let's learn everything. And we're like, holy shit, this is wild, because this started happening when we were researching for the podcast. So we're researching for the podcast and all of a sudden it's like, what? This massive Atlantic article.
I also think that, like, the being not an expert leads to a level of shock and awe that is just, like, ideal for a podcast too, because, like, you want the host, the person, like, talking about all of this, you want them to be as surprised as you are.
Yes.
Because if they're talking about this, like, yeah, you know, this
is obvious.
Papyrology scandal. I think that it does definitely adds a level to, like, the accessibility in, like, a broad term of just, like, even just, like, academic accessibility, you know, of just, like, coming at this in a way where you're like, this is fucked up. Somebody else, please think about how fucked up this is with me.
It's so wild. It's hard because you really have to tell the whole story in its entirety. And honestly, like, I'm not one to be like, go listen to it. But, like, just if you don't want to listen to our
podcast.
No, please,
though, go listen to
Sweet. No, but, like, just these four. So it's three episodes, but then the episode four is about, it's Malcolm setting up all the papyrus terminology. So I would recommend listening to that just to, like, ground yourself in papyrology and what it is. But really it's 5 to 7. And it's just, it's mind blowing. But, and so I'm telling this all in, like, very random parts. So I'm going to talk about Cartonnage because I know you want to talk about that. And then
so
I'm going to talk about Roberta Mazza because she's great. So the Cartonnage thing came about basically because people started to call into question the provenance of everything. And so basically what happened is Dirk Obbing, like, faked a Cartonnage discovery.
Allegedly.
Okay, whatever. We're going to say allegedly for everything, but I think this is, like, known. So basically what happened, so cartonnage is paper mache, basically. But really what it is it's, like, mummy, which is a very, like, paper mache kind of experience. And so this is a very interesting thing.
It's papyrus around mummies, and it is
recycled
paper
papyrus.
Mache experience.
It's paper mache is a very easy way to explain it.
Yeah, and it's not always recycled, but in the case of what we're talking about, definitely, like, the recycled cartonnage, the recycled papyrus, it is a wealth of fascination.
Absolutely. And this is a thing that I think is really interesting to think about. And like you and I grew up in, I guess, as similar a society as you could, being Canadian and Australian, the amount of Egyptian things, mummies and stuff at museums that you see.
Yeah.
There's a real lack of respect for the dead of other societies that we have. And this really plays into that. And you think about like, the fact that they're on display at all. You think about the fact that European tourists used to go to Egypt and buy mummies to then powder and eat. Wild. You didn't know this?
Sorry. No. What?
People used to buy mummies from Egypt and yeah. they would like powder them and they would think it had health benefits or it was like a delicacy. Like,
so by powder, you mean like crush them into powder?
Yeah. They would eat it.
Yeah. Okay.
And this is just, and like speaking to Osama God, and I really recommend you talking to him about this mm-hmm. and like about him as an Egyptian who lives in Germany and about the way that like he sort of talked about it with his kids. He has two daughters and like the way that society somehow has no reverence. Like, can you imagine in America someone going and, you know, digging up a whole bunch of bodies and then being like, oh, but maybe there's like Egyptian, maybe there's Greek papyrology on there. So it's basically what cartonnage is. It's like they are basically taking apart mummies to see if there's something that is more valuable to them. I love them doing air quotes and no one can see it, but more valuable to them, yeah. like a piece of Sappho. And so with this specific...
Euripides, a lot of Euripides yes. was found this way too, just to add that. Yeah, a lot
and
of Euripides.
It's like, it's just the very Eurocentric idea that that is more important than preserving dead in a way that was respectful to a society. And we had this very... we had this moment of realizing that we had two conflicts. I don't like inconsistencies in beliefs, but then... I realized that I think it's Yale University Library has a policy where if there's a fire, they take all the oxygen out of the room and everybody inside dies to save the books. And I was like, that's fine. And we're like, wait a minute. But I think it's different. You're signing
no, but,
up for
okay.
it when you walk into the library.
Okay. Yes. Agree entirely. Like, I mean, honestly, I'm kind of on that side. Like, I just think we have enough humans. You know, that's my opinion. But I also like... And I don't want to, like, give myself away too much here. And I don't, to me, it's not about, well, I mean, I'm trying to decide how, we'll see what this comes across after I say it to you. But I think that if, it's hard because of the Eurocentrism and because these are typically Egyptian mm-hmm. mummies. And I think that that's the part that trips me up because obviously, like, with the history that, you know, white people have, I think that we need to be like making up for everything and therefore be like extra, you know, yes. caring and, yes. and all of these things that white people need to do to make up for what we have done. And I say we quite specifically, like, obviously I'm white, but also I think that it's really important for white people to like own it up and use that collective we, even yep. though like I personally,
I'm also white and I feel like that's very important.
Yeah. Like, you know,
for me to say too, we're both white people talking about this. I'm trying to share the reflections of people of color who we've spoken to, but like ultimately I am mm-hmm. still white.
And ultimately, like, neither of us personally have done anything, but we are going to own up to like the things that white people have done. 100%. And that's important. Mm-hmm. But all of that said too, like, I do think it's hard because it tends to be like you're finding Greek things with dead people of color, and that is a problem. Mm. But I also do think that ultimately, like, literature is important overall. And like, for me, but I think this also comes from like a complete atheism and like not remotely having any thoughts on the dead. And so I don't think that that's like sound or fair all around, because like you don't know how these people would have felt and they probably would have felt like completely differently. But I also do think there's a level of importance in like histories. It's just that the things we tend to find are Greek things with dead people from Egypt. So you're like, yeah. you're talking dead people from Africa finding Greek things, which, like, you know, I think that there's like a, there is an important distinction to draw between like the Greek world and whiteness, because while we put it on them now, it wasn't, they wouldn't have seen it then, and no. they had a very multicultural society, and like, but we put it on them now. And so the fact that we put whiteness onto Greece, ancient Greece now, I don't even think that modern Greek people necessarily get all the perks of being white. It's so fucking dark and weird. No. But the fact that we, as like a quote unquote Western civilization, like put whiteness onto ancient Greek people, and therefore find their work, their white work, on the bodies of non-white Egyptians is so dark. And so I think there's this like interesting and dark line to like kind of straddle in terms of the importance of finding ancient histories and ancient writings and ancient everything with everything that comes from how you can possibly find it. And I don't think that there's like, there is no answer. And probably, I mean, ultimately the answer probably is like, stop fucking with bodies from, you know, Africa.
Yeah. But I think mostly the answer is just like, it's probably not our call at this point. And I think that's probably more for me what it is. Like, I'm also atheist. So like for me, like, you know, when I die, like take my organs, take my body for science.
If you could find like, Euripides on me, please. Yeah. Like if I die and you could find a Euripides quote, God, take it.
But the point really being with that is that that's cool for us to say. It's just, I just think at this point, it's just not our call. And no, I think that's for me, like my takeaway from all of it is just like, it's not our call. Like, and I just feel like this whole thing, it's like, it's, and it was staged also.
Well,
like,
yeah, I think that, I mean, I'm talking cartonnage in general, but like that's fucked up.
Mm.
That like anything being staged is, so did, was the whole fragment staged? Was it a made up fragment?
Yeah, like, and apparently, so it was funny because someone was like in the room being like, oh my God, that's Sappho. And then we're talking to this amazing Canadian papyrologist, Mike Sampson. And he was saying, oh yeah, Sappho is very visibly Sappho on site. Because we're like, how do you just see it and be like, wow, that's Sappho, that's wild. But apparently it's very, very fair.
I think it's the aeolic too, because there's not a lot of,
and the way it's, and the stanzas and the way it's written. And so they staged it, but it's still not really, anyway, we've spoken about this a lot. I really can't, like, as you know, okay, so I'm going to tell one more story and then I'm going to say where we're at now because there's been a bit of news about it this week. And then I'm going to just tell you all to listen to my podcast. So, which again, I wouldn't usually do because like, do what you want, but like, I really just cannot, if this story intrigues you, I really just cannot tell it on this episode. So Roberta Mazza, who we spoke to, is writing a book about this. She's amazing. She's an Italian woman. And my favorite part is just that she was with her mom in Italy in lockdown and she was so bored and she was looking up artifacts on eBay. And she found this guy who was selling something, I think maybe a Sappho fragment. And she like went undercover, like, hey, I'm interested in buying it. And he sent her a WhatsApp number and then she Googled it. And then like he sent, she's like back and forth with him. And she was supposed to meet him in London. And like, it's this whole amazing story. He ended up threatening her and he knew where she was like teaching or whatever. So this is the Egyptian dealer where I think potentially this Sappho fragment came from. So that's a whole other side of it, which is just this woman, this amazing woman just being like, I'm going undercover. So she's Roberta Mazza the spy to us, like Harriet the spy, you know, she's great. I just love that's how people spend. I love this about the pandemic, how many people have like just done like every this whole universal basic income misconception that if people don't have some job to do that they're not going to be creative and amazing. Like I'm just wondering if this ever would have come out like it did if not for the pandemic.
Yeah, that's a fascinating little like just that additional piece of like just people having time on their hands.
Like Mike Sampson was a new dad and he was like up, like he'd put the baby to bed and he'd be up at night like looking up the timestamps of photos and like all of them were doing this crazy detective work for no reason except just like they were like, we need to get to the bottom of this provenance, which people don't do enough.
Absolutely. That is just, it's so, I mean, the levels of it are just utterly fascinating all around.
I mean, it's just such an interesting story and it's just something we absolutely did not expect. And it's just my favorite thing to talk to people about. And we've gotten so much feedback on those episodes. People just being like, wow, came for lesbianism, stayed for the papyrology.
Yes. Like I'm I'm angry at myself that I haven't listened to those episodes already, because I'm definitely going to. Just like the level of nerd in me that wants to know all of this shit and all of the drama, though, too.
It's
like,
so much drama.
Right? It's like, I mean, the nerd stuff is fun. I love it. Love to learn. Love to like be able to spout these facts back to people later. But the drama involved in it as well is like,
it's next level. Incredible. It was just great to put together. And on the same thing of like academics, like I think, you know, it's easy to, if you met a papyrologist at a party, you probably wouldn't think it would be that interesting. But actually, like, I ended up speaking to Malcolm, I think, for like an hour and a half. It was just like such an interesting conversation. And we were like, should we bring out the voices in? We're like, no, we could literally just have like two episodes with Malcolm. He's so great. It's just, it's been such an interesting thing. So where we're at now with it, which I'm going to just quickly say, there's been news this week. So basically, what we knew at the time of recording the last podcast is that Hobby Lobby had they'd asked Dirk Obbing to return the money to them that they had paid for the artifacts, which I think at the time was like 1.5 million or something. He paid like 10, I think I said 100,000 in the podcast, but when I was reading my notes, it said $10,000. And I was like, okay, he paid them an insignificant amount and then he ghosted them. Like, he ghosted Hobby Lobby.
Oh my God.
Which is great. Okay, so just as soon as this week, he is being sued for $7 million from Hobby Lobby. They had to return at least 5,000 artifacts to Egypt.
Good.
And the biggest Sappho fragment, the brother's poem I was talking to you about, that has been lost. No one knows where it is.
But it's real.
I mean, some people don't know, like, if it's real. Is it real? Because it's not very good, which I think is a really great take. Like, they were, I'm like, yeah. Really, like, I mean,
maybe it's her worst poem and she'd be so angry if we found it.
But I mean, like, that's the funny thing about it is we do have fragments of her work, and I think that's a really interesting thing about Sappho. And like, I know with the old age poem, which I think is fragment 58 off the top of my head, they had like, and it's funny because we, as you know, write a song for every episode. And for the pre-2004 Discovery, we did like a psychedelic rock song. So it was very like fragmented, and I'm a big Pink Floyd fan, so I was like, this is like a Pink Floyd song. So we did like a psychedelic track for that, because it was very like running away.
Yeah, bitten, there was a floating pink pig you, in the sky.
Yes, absolutely. And so, and then they found all this extra stuff, and so Elise did like a kind of country song to it. And Anne Carson, who is one of the main translators of Sappho's work, was like, I don't like the new discovered poem. She's like, I liked it better when it's fragmented. And so it's funny because people are always like, I wish I had all 10,000 lines of Sappho's poetry. And it's like, maybe it's not very good.
Yeah.
Like, obviously it was good because she is someone who is being renowned.
Very famous.
Very famous. Yeah. But like, it's probably not all good, you know? Like, even Pink Floyd have some questionable songs. Like, every artist has some not great bangers.
Well, that and like, you know, I mean, Pink Floyd, you don't know the stuff they didn't publish. Yeah. they didn't release. So like, if you know, 2000 years from now somebody's finding like some notes in their stuff, like, it could be utter garbage, right? Like, because that's the thing about, I mean, ancient stuff in general, right? It's like, this is not necessarily the stuff they wanted us to read.
No.
And I think that's fascinating. And like, yeah, like, who knows what Sappho would think to the fact that, you know, all these certain poems or whatever are being studied. Like, maybe she'd be like, no, you know, I really only want you reading these ones. Mm. Or like, these are my words. It's like my rant at the beginning, or like, I think this is probably off air, but like, I don't like the first episodes of my podcast and everyone fucking listens to them. And so like, if, you know, 2000 years from now, somebody was to like find my podcast and only listen to the first one, I would hate that
I have a whole Battlestar Galactica podcast that honestly I started because I had depression and I needed a project. I just had no filter. I was on a full, like, I have fully changed, and it's actually kind of beautiful in some ways. I would hate if that was the only thing that was found. So I think, Liv, this is where we make our pact, which we've made with a few people, and maybe you. I think we've done this with you before, but maybe not on your podcast, where we go and bury transcripts of our podcast in the Egyptian desert, although we've got to really look at the climate change patterns and what's going to keep, you know. But I think that we should,
I might go to like Parnassus.
Okay,
I think I'm gonna bury mine on Parnassus because, one, it's a mountain.
Okay.
So when the, you know, the seas inevitably rise, it'll be fine, but also because that's where the muse is saying, and I'll just seem so much more fancy.
That's true. You know? Yeah, we've really got to set out a plan for this, because the audio thing, we don't know how that's going to... You ought to have something to play. I think we've really got to get our transcripts on Papyrus and, and really sort it out. So that's something to think about, so that we can trick the future into thinking that we're important.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's a good idea, if there's a future.
I mean...
So, I mean, to be perfectly frank to all our listeners here, we just randomly started talking about a bunch of other things. And so we're just going to... Yeah, exactly. I've done it with people before. There's a bunch of different breaks in my incredible episode with Nikita Gill where I just, like, added a note saying, like, hey, we just became friends. And so, like, you don't get to hear it all. And there's going to be some weird transitions. Such is life. So, this is one of those instances. But honestly, like, the Pepperology stuff is so fascinating. So I'm thrilled that this was your idea to talk about in an episode where I was just like, let's talk about Sappho.
You're queer. Let's do Pride.
I was like, frankly, I was like, we get along really well, which means that I can just have, like, a really nice, easy episode to talk through without having the stress of pressure of not knowing somebody very well. So this is perfect.
It's been lovely. I feel included after being, you know, not... I mean, it was my choice. I feel very included now. Finally part of the Myths Baby family.
But yeah, I mean, honestly, just like talking about Sappho is so thrilling. I think she straddles that line between mythology and history, even though she doesn't technically, but like the vibe of her does. She feels
like a myth.
She does, exactly. Like she talks about myths because it's Greek mythology, or it's, you know, ancient Greece, they all did. But at the same time, Sappho feels like this sort of like an enigma, especially because as I go through all of these Pride episodes, like none of them really involve women, and it's like a stretch for the ones that do. So I just want to focus on Sappho because she's like this very real woman that we can hold on to and be like, freedom. She was famous. She wrote about men and women. She just like lived her life and loved who she loved. And
let's be honest, like Beyonce, Taylor Swift, Lady Gaga, like all of them are Sappho and all of them will be historical figures. But I'd like to think in 2,500 years, they'll also be kind of like mythological, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Exactly. I think we literally like had a similar conversation when we talked on your podcast where I added Phoebe Bridgers. I think she gives me real Sappho vibes.
Yes. Oh,
But yeah, I mean, to wrap this all up in a super non-linear way.
We have to wrap it up so we can have another glass of wine.
Oh, nerds, thank you so much for listening. As always, what a fun episode. I mean, I say it every time. It's just so much fun that I get to do this, talk to all of these incredible people, become friends with them in so many cases, and just, it's a real thrill of this podcast and my life. So thank you all for coming along for it. I am Liv, and I love this shit.
This is it. Your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Are you tired of your scented cleaning products smelling and cleaning like meh? Then it's time for an upgrade with the power of Clorox Scentiva. With an uplifting scent that smells like coconut, Clorox Scentiva gives you powerful clean like Clorox, but a feeling like being transported to a tropical island retreat. Imagine putting your phone on Do Not Disturb, tuning out all the constant... Just the feeling of warm sand in between your toes
and a fruity drink in your hand. The ones with the little umbrella. Refresh your home to feel like an all-inclusive vacation by getting Clorox Scentiva. Also available in grapefruit and lavender scents at a nearby retail store.
At JCPenney, fashion counts for everybody and everybody. It's spring, and with the weather changing and so many great things coming up like Mother's Day and the wind down tour, I definitely need a fresh spring wardrobe for every occasion. This spring, I'm looking for that perfect flowy spring dress for Mother's Day, as well as replacing my everyday basics. That's what I love about JCPenney. They have so many stylish and comfortable options that I always find just what I'm looking for there. Spring is a feel-good season and comes in all shapes, sizes, and colors. The fashion at JCPenney is the same way. Refresh your wardrobe this spring with styles that gets you something to wear that fits your favorite moments of the season at prices that feel just as good. Discover brands that get you and put style and comfort first, like Worthington and Liz Claiborne for her, each in women's petite and plus sizes, and Stafford and Mutual Weave for him, style and comfort for all, even big and tall. Plus even more for the whole family like Levi's and Exertion. Here, spring comes in all shapes, sizes, and colors. JCPenney, make everybody count.